folks. Welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. A Jaybird. How goes it?
Steven.
Oh, really good. Really good, actually.
Up there in the frozen tundra.
Yeah, nice day today, though, finally.
Well, is it gonna melt?
It's going to melt. It's kind of looking like right now like we're going to have a little bit of a late ice out. Ice outs like in 3 weeks. Yeah, well, what are you going to do? I mean, hopefully it's just a few days late. So we'll see what happens. Weather's going to turn here eventually.
Yeah, well, yeah, you could be down here where it's been like 50 to 70 to wildfires to 80-mile-an-hour winds. Just if you can think of a season I've had it this week, it's crazy.
Riding that roller coaster down there big time.
Riding my pony. Yeah, it has been just something. If you guys, if you're in the you know, the Ohio's, the West Virginia's, the Kentucky's, the Tennessee's, you know what I'm talking about. It's just like, huh, what's today going to bring? I have never.
Always a challenge.
I'll say this. I was fishing with Sideshow Brian, good buddy of mine. And that day, he came down from PA, and I've never been afraid creaking until that day. Creaker! We went creaking in the John Boat Special, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
By the way, Jay, we're going to work on, you know, a lot of people like to do boat tours, right? You see these guides, they get their boat, right? And they do a, you know.
Yeah. Good idea.
$100,000 boat tour. $60,000. Going to do a $150 boat
tour. How to do it up. How to do one up for under $500. Loaded.
Loaded. It's got side scan if you turn your head from the left to the right.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You know, no, it's just a joke of, you know, you don't need a bunch of boat. But anyway, God, we were out there. Freaking, the only time I've been freaked out from the wind, because there are just freaking widow makers falling out of the trees at us.
Like, yeah,
we were
creaking.
Oh, my goodness. There's one that came down the size of someone's leg. It was like a freaking javelin missile fell out of the sky. And I was like, yeah, we're good, right? We're going to get out of here. It was nuts. There were 50, 60-mile-an-hour sustained winds, and you just heard the branches breaking everywhere, and, like, you're in this tiny little creek of stuff. Anyway, that was harrowing, I'll tell you that much. But anyway, goodness gracious, great deals of fire. Jay, there's some stuff going on at the Muskie Shop right now.
Yeah, we got specials this weekend. Cooking right now. Abu Garcia Beast Reels, their top tier musky baitcasters are $50 off.
Dang.
And shield rods, $50 off.
You could save $100 on the April Fool's weekend super sale. Was it Power? I'm looking here. Power Pro.
Yeah. All the Power Pro lines, 10% off. So, I mean, you need line for the season. Now's the time.
Get it. I'll tell you something that was exciting, speaking of the season and guys getting on fish.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to get Titan pictures on my phone, and it was like, I'm just talking about myself here for a second. I had the warm and fuzzies today, Jay.
No, that's
I was
good.
Warm and fuzzy all at once.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my favorite things in this world are warm and fuzzy. But I was out on the boat, and I actually got multiple texts from people catching fish on Titans. It was freaking awesome. It was really cool.
Okay.
And so a couple
really, they got them like 2 days ago, and they're catching fish
they
with
got
them already.
And it's just like some of my Ohio guys. I got some Pennsylvania guys. I got a West Virginia fish. It was really neat. It was just a really cool experience. I'm so happy for anybody that's got out and been able to fish them, and it's just like – sort of a dream come true, because everybody's messaging is like, yeah, this is as easy as it gets, and it looks awesome. And it's cool to see, you know, from fishing the protos and all this stuff, to see people catching fish. I'm like, that is kind of badass. I was really excited about it. So it was
nice.
Cool. So congrats to all you guys that shot me messages today and got you fished. A couple good ones, which was cool, because Dive and Rise and Rubber are like those two bait classes, regardless of conditions, are going to do some work. You know what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
It was really cool to see that. That was exciting. But there are other new baits. I want to talk about, there's another one. I saw it this week. Mm-hmm. The Gooch's banana.
The Gooch is back, baby.
Okay, the Gooch.
Yep.
Jay, have you checked your Gooch?
Yep. Yeah, that's a Wisconsin product.
Jay.
He's been making the tallywhacker forever, your favorite bait.
Jay.
Steve, talk to me.
How big's your Gooch?
This thing is huge.
It's a freaking huge Gooch.
It's yeah.
It's a giant Gooch.
Yeah, the banana bait is back. It's kind of a
8-inch Gooch.
Twitching dive rising thing. Yeah. It's neat.
No, it's old school and the Gooch is back, baby.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an 8-inch Gooch. That's all you need to know.
I guess.
I don't know. The word Gooch is funny. So you got you get Jay. $21 will get you a black Gooch. 8 inches.
Bingo.
That's it. 8-inch black Gooch. Eat it up, boys.
Welcome to Muskie 360 at night. With your host, Stephen Paul.
It's Gooch's banana. It's the name of the bait. You got a shad Gooch. You got a flow orange Gooch. These are cool, though. They really are. It reminds me that there's this weird kind of, I don't know, twitchy, like you said, twitchy minnow bait, sand catty thing going on with these deals before there were sand cats.
Yeah, it's a super buoyant, erratic deal, kind of dive rise action. One's jointed, one's straight. Take your pick. It's a Hayward, Wisconsin, old school company, like you said. Those things were made years and years and years ago, and somehow he is making some more for us. So
that's cool. They're like, if you're wanting something different, they're cool. You got a split Gooch,
the banana split
banana. Oh, it's not a split Gooch. My apologies.
Tom told me, hey, when you do the description, Jay, make sure you say this is the only banana you should have in your boat. Apparently, it's an old boating
wives'
tale.
That's the dumbest crap ever. I'm sick of that. Okay, I'll tell you what that's from. You'll hear that.
What is it? I don't know what it's
from.
Don't
bring a banana in the boat.
I mean, don't bring a banana in your boat.
You want? Listen, I have low potassium, and I eat bananas in the boat. I don't know if I do or not. I like bananas. Anyway, what that comes from is those were dangerous loads to haul. So when you were picking up bananas from, like, Indonesia or whatever you're doing, people are carting them like the actual, like, merchant marines. It came from no one would haul bananas because they'd have snakes in them.
Snakes and deadly spiders.
So you would have a cargo hold full of, like, you didn't want bananas on the boat because they're bad luck, because, like, old deckhand Johnny went downstairs and he's dead because he got bit by a gaboon viper or something, you know?
Vipers. Yeah.
That's where it comes from. Back to Gooches and bananas and old wives' tales. Other cool stuff I was excited about, some of that Hog Seeker stuff. If you guys haven't seen that, they're pretty neat. Got the hog teasers, you know.
Wood.
So you can smell the cedar.
Wood.
Wooden baits. What do we got? This is the Jackal Dunkle.
Yeah, the Dunkle finally made it. Oh, my goodness. Tom at work.
He ordered
those.
He
is so excited.
I one time had a fist fight with a guy named Jackal Dunkle at a West Virginia boat ramp.
Mm-hmm.
My name's Jackal Dunkle. Jackal Dunkle.
Yeah, that works.
No, that's a cool bait. There's just a lot of neat new stuff. I was just pointing it out. I like it. I like the slow tease. Hog Seeker. It's fun. You know, you got the big old 12-inch... Hog Seekers, hogs. It's cool. I don't know. That's just the new and exciting stuff. Get yourself a beast, Jay.
Get yourself a shield rod.
Get yourself a beast. I don't know. Get yourself some Live Edge Rustic Musky Coasters. Oh, goodness. Good. I'm sorry, folks. I'm brain dead already. I'm long days on the pond here. Other than that, you know, you get yourself a Titan Fish. Shoot the picture over to the app for your old buddy Steve. That was the highlight of my day.
Yeah, we like to see pictures. We love to see pictures.
Anyway,
let's you know what else we got coming in. We got some more of those toothy tough baits too. Those things are selling like wildfire.
Those are cool. There's a West.
Those soft plastic mm-hmm. ones? Yeah, those are cool.
There's some very West, nice. West by God Creeker action. I think we're going to shoot us a video on one of them boys.
You should shoot that in the Creeker boat I gave you.
Mm-hmm. It's a Creeker special. Those are cool. I do like them. Love that swear bomb. Jackal, Dunkle, and Ricky Bobo swear bomb. Anyway, goodness gracious, it's falling apart already. Let's just get to the Q&A and get it over with, shall we? Dan,
yeah.
Two Titan questions. Since the tail doesn't come attached in the box, do you want it going up or down? Okay, let's start there. Doesn't matter. So I like the tail pointed up just because the aesthetic deal. It can be sideways. It can be whatever you want it. Not going to really make a big difference on that end of things. So wherever you want the tail to point, I don't think it's really going to affect anything. Again, I've told you guys, you can put any tail you want on there. A lot of different tail options, big ribbon tails, whatever you got laying around. The different plastics will give that bait a little bit of a different look. And he says, second, what type of leader are you using with Titans? Doesn't matter. It really doesn't. Typically I fish straight wire the majority of the time, but I tested them with every kind of fluoro, every kind of multi-strand. Because I go through my phases. I said that one time, Jay. I was like, oh, I'm fishing multi-strand. I don't know. No. It doesn't matter.
I use floral. Yeah. I mean, throwing mine, I just because that's what I use mainly. So it works fine.
Yeah.
Works really good.
You don't have to. That's the joy of that bait. You don't have to think about it there, kids. We were throwing them today on the boat, and the dude was, he was sort of shocked. He's like, it doesn't matter. I said, that's the thing, is just strap it on and throw it, and you're throwing diving rods without having to do all the crap. So don't overthink it. Don't worry about it. It will run on just about anything you got there. Mitch, what trolling rod holders do you recommend? I see some guys using rocket launcher style setups, and I've seen in videos that you run single holder setups. What's the difference? Ooh. I like Folbies.
What do you say? Rocket holder? What's that?
Rocket launchers. The metal tubes.
That's just gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha.
I'm not a big rocket launcher setup guy. I'll be honest with you, I've never owned a boat that had that setup on it. Fished off of them before. Definitely if you're 100%, you're like, I'm running planer boards every day, running big, big, wide setups, that could be the way to go. I'll flatline. Yep. I'll do two, I'll do four, I'll do six, whatever lines might be. That setup, I mean, like, if I'm going to have that on the boat, I'm going to do those tubes and those big, and guys, if you don't know what a rocket launcher is, it's like a stainless steel tube. You just slide the rod in it. I've never been a big fan of those. I know it would be really extreme case for a rod to come out of there, but I don't feel like, it weirds me out. They're not secure. You could put a leash on them and all this stuff. If you're not doing like some serious intricate planer board trolling, I think single style rod holders is the way to go. Scotties and Folbies. I'm a Folby guy, made in the USA.
Yeah, I think pretty much everyone at the Muskie shop on their rigs is running Folbies. I can't think of anyone not using Folbies.
They're bad. So good.
They don't break. They work really well. And I mean, the adjustability, they're perfect.
I don't even lock mine down, by the way. I just make sure that now the way I run mine is I make sure that the side that doesn't open is facing the back of the boat that the fish would pull against. And I just them out. And it's so awesome because when the fish hits, boom, grab the rod and you just pull it straight up. You don't have to undo anything.
Yeah.
I love those things because, like you said, they have extension arms. They've got this. The system on my cleats on my boat, by the way, are Folby cleats. So I don't have a permanent cleat on my boat, which is nice because if you're fly fishing like I do for muskies, there's nothing to, like, if I take all the baits off the deck of my boat, there's nothing to hang your float line or your sinking line on. And so Folby makes some cool stuff. It's a made in the USA, proud to be American product. backed up. Phobi has the Lee Greenwood promise. If you break a Phobi product, Lee Greenwood will come in person and replace it.
America.
America. Ugh. I don't know. I mean, there's merits to both those setups. I don't know. I'm a single rod holder kind of guy.
Always have been, always will be.
Whatever. What do you think, Jay?
Yeah, Phobi. Single.
Yeah.
I had an old bolt that I used so salty down east. That's what everyone says. Down, I fell into the trap.
Down. Southbound
and those
down.
Those work nice, too. Yeah, just if you want something that you can just, you know, like if you got a creaker bolt. For example, those work really nice because you can just twist them on, you know, takes about 10 seconds. And when you're done for the day, if you want them off, you just unscrew them and throw them in your, you know, storage box.
Those critters are tough, isn't it? Aren't they like galvanized?
Metal. I mean, they're not going to break. Yeah, they work good. They're very low profile, too. I mean, if you have a really small rig, like a creaker rig, they work good.
Yeah, they're tough. Ain't gonna break. If you break that one, boys, you'll break the rod before you break it down east.
Oh yeah.
I mean they're ridiculous. So anyway, that'd be the take there. Chris, how do you approach fishing super dense weed beds and mats? If you figured out that muskies are using the weed mats and the really thick stuff as shade and you know there's bait fish there, how do you get into those really dense areas? Wow, that's good point, good question. Dive and rise, I'll tell you that much.
Edges and pockets,
but there's something to be said about dive and rise baits that jam into it. But if it's like matted, and he's saying the word mat, so I'm going to go for it. It's matted, nasty business. There's very few options of things that'll get through there that will not foul when you're not fishing a pocket. There's something to be said. What is it? What's the Cobra jig, Jay?
I was just going to say, if you use an extremely heavy jig like bait rigs, and punch through their, you know, soft trailer on there, it's a weedless jig. It's like an oversized bass flipping jig. You know, I got those plastic little weed guard things sticking out there.
That is
punch it through the mat and vertical snap it a few times. I mean,
before
it can
it
be
fouls,
done.
Yeah. That's a very bassy punching kind of thing.
Punching.
They call it punching. Yeah. Well, you'll hear these rednecks, but I'm down there fishing on you, and we're punching. But the tactic is throw a bait that punches through the vegetation. It might be lily pads or whatever. So it punches down through, and you've got a very small workable space to sort of work it through there, right? Guru and I did this one time where we were on a pattern and we were using heavy jig heads and taking these big Kalins, right? The big Magumbos, and rigging them so it was as weedless as we could get it. And then heat shrinking over the snaps, heat shrinking over the swivel and cleaning up that signal chain as much as we could so it couldn't pick up anything.
Yeah.
Because if you could work that thing 4 feet, you were in the money. Right. If you could get it through that mat and get it to go 3-4 feet forward before it's completely fouled, you had a pretty good chance of getting a bite. Right. Really, really, really wicked thick vegetation. There's so few options. You know, and when I'm talking mats, I'm thinking of the thickest stuff. If it's dense and it's just a thicket, there's not a lot of great options. I mean, one could, in theory, this is another very bassy, stupid thing, would be like a buzz blade, right? If you think the fish are hot and they're just going to blow up out of it. But, you know, there's something to be said about some of those bass tactics where they fish frogs. Jay, do you remember that lure? It was horrible. The Odyssey pig or the sloppy pig.
No. Slop hog.
Slop hog.
Was it
a slop hog or a slop?
It was Odyssey. Yeah, it was the first one. It was shaped like a slop frog. which is a bass bait, right? But it's really hard. It's a solid plastic bait. Then Phantom got it.
Yeah.
And they made a version of that.
For a minute, yeah.
It was, yeah, they were never a good seller. People were like, oh, it's not doing anything. Well, it's just hopping along. I mean, it's just like a, you're providing the action, tick, 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 you know, just little pulls on it.
Slop frog or slop hog?
Slop hog.
I'm going slop hogging. You ever been slop hogging, Jay?
Yeah.
Guarantee you have up there in the Northwoods. But it's, you know, there's few options there. That bait, I had fish blow up on them, dude. Tough hookup bait. Because didn't they have like a, they got like, I think I'm looking at one on the wall. There's like a single hook on the back of that thing.
Yeah, like a single 12-aught or something huge. Yeah,
it's a tough game.
But what kind of weeds are you fishing over that junk? I mean, like that sloppy scum weed or like,
well,
or like
fishing
mats of milfoil or laid
dense,
over? Or?
Yeah, if it's a dense mat, like a milfoil mat or something like that, I mean... Jay, we're all looking for a hydrilla gorilla, baby. That's it. So
yeah, you know, you're probably right.
You got to take the fight to them. That would. What? I don't know. I mean, other stuff I've talked to about super dense stuff is Booker. At one point, this is back in the day, he was taking top raiders and just putting like a single hook on the back.
Okay.
And like making sure that hook's standing up. I mean, you're gonna lose hookup percentage. I mean, it's just if that's where they're at and you got to get there, that's the deal. The other thing I would always recommend if it's really dense mats is fishing parallel to the outside of them as best as you can.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, here's my little bait fish or my little glide bait working the outside and try to get those critters to come out. If they won't come out and play, like, go punch him with a jig. That's all there is for it. And you know, if you want to miss a fish, get you a slop hog or whatever the hell it's called. Connor, love the podcast. I'm a West Virginia creeker. What do you recommend for cold fronts and skinny water situations? Situations. Yee yee. Yee. Okay, I added the yee yee myself. I'm teasing.
Cold fronts and skinny water.
Cold fronts and skinny water. The JSE memoir. Man, I'll tell you, if we're talking some West Virginia skinny water, I'm going to look for holes. I'm going to look for little current pockets. I'm going to look for eddies, anything that's got a little more depth to it. And the thing is, like, and you'll notice this, Jay, like a lot of the West Virginia baits, are buoyant. You know, you're not dealing with a tremendous amount of depth in some of these creeker situations. So if you remember like Amabamas or, you know, some of the crane stuff, yeah.
Right. Like even the glide baits, you know, they have a slow sink rate.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Once you start working them, yeah, they stay high in the water column. Yeah.
Right. So you're creaking. even like a shum, like the David French shum's pretty buoyant. So having a bait that's going to hang and suspend as much as possible in those skinny water situations. So, you know, let's say we're dealing with 3 feet of water. Well, if it's running half the water column, it's getting down a foot and a half, but it'll hang. That's going to be a benefit there. Now, the trick is having those small baits with hang time. You're just talking about Phantoms. I mean, there's not much wrong with a 6-inch Phantom. You know, as a hang time small bait, it's not got a super fast sink. You know, something that should not be overlooked in creaking are shallow bulldogs.
Yeah.
That's one thing is like, don't overlook a shallow bulldog. You know, if it's 6 feet depth or somewhere in that neighborhood, 10 feet, I mean, a shallow dog is going to get you where you need to be a lot of times. And you can, with some up pops, you can really make that happen. I do like, man, and it's getting toad time. It's toad time. Shallow toads are killer in that situation. A lot of you guys sent messages like, send me a picture or show me a picture of your top loaded toad. I was throwing one today, got some looks on it. I'll put something on the app here. I just been slammed.
But yeah, Fred at work was asking the very same thing, actually. He wanted me to ask you. I kept forgetting.
How do you top load your toad?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
All I'm doing is take the hooks off the bow and put them off the top using split rings to make a chain. So I attach to the nose thing. I'll show you guys in a video, but some of you guys just figured it out. But you can bottom bounce that thing and make contact in with timber or anything. You're really not going to get hung up that much. So that's some cold front creaker stuff there. What I'm going, okay, this makes sense. I need hang time or I need bottom contact without being a nightmare. What else comes to mind? I'll tell you, and it takes a little finesse, but some of your deeper running crankbaits like a Depth Raider or a Livingston Pounder or a Lungeon, right? Work with a high rod tip and you sort of contour where you need to be. So if you need to just get it down just a bit, you can sort of get some depth and big action to pull some fish up in a cold front. You just don't want to sit there and just crank it in the bottom and get it hung, right? Finesse it through there. That's going to be a thought that I'm going for. I'm like, okay, can I work this pounder, this Livingston Lures crankbait pounder, you know, just off the bottom, so I'm putting it in their face. That would be where I'm going with that. What else, Jay, do you like that's sort of like shallow water?
Well, you know, shallow fronty slammers, twitch baits, little 5-6-inch slammers. And don't forget to let that thing, I mean, I'm talking skinny water here. Yeah. Be afraid to let that thing break the surface when you lay off of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's part of the whole pause presentation.
Hurt. Yeah. You're like start, stop, start, stop sometimes.
Yeah, you know, work that thing in 2 feet of water.
Yeah, it's not the worst thing to do. It's they'll grab it. So they'll grab it.
Absolutely.
You know, another thing you just brought up, which is the old tricks, though. I mean, you can take a little 5-inch slammer and add a little plumber's tape on it to even slow that rise more in those tough bites. Just a little finesse to it, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of times, the way a bait advances forward is important, but what it does with no force exerted on is important. So it's much like dive and rise baits, where if a dive and rise bait rises too fast, it will not get to eat. So you got to slow the rate of rise because you're sort of dialing in that perfect deal. Same thing applies to your crankbaits. Of like, you might be getting looks, but it's rising too fast. If it has just a slightly slower rise, that can be the difference. Of something that's going to get eight. So don't be afraid to tweak that. That would be the creaker roundup there off the top of the head, Jay.
Yeah.
Some of them. We're blaring through here, folks. Long week. It's a beating. You got your boy Stevie's tired. I'm tired. Jordan, how do you classify seasons between, say, like Wisconsin, Minnesota, and some southern states? You know, as far as like, is there October or November kind of stuff? I know he says, sorry for the phrasing of the question. Now I get what he's saying. So what is the juxtaposition of July in Minocqua versus July on Cave Run, or July on Chautauqua versus, or, you know, July on Leech? So.
Right, right.
Yeah. And what you got to look. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just, you know, because midsummer, peak summer in the Northwoods compared to, you know, down by you or Cave Run or something like that is that's different. It's, you know, when the water temps are too warm to fish, a lot of guys leave that area and you know, go on vacation or kind of migrate to a little bit cooler climate for a couple months, you know. So, well, yeah, it's not the same thing everywhere, you know. That whole water temp thing, you know, where it starts to get around 80, people get real nervous, you know. It's obviously not super healthy for the fish.
Well, and
that's extremely debatable. Go ahead.
Yeah, but what he's getting at is not maybe the water temp, it's the classification of seasons. Because I've talked about this on the boat a couple times to folks, which is the crux of the matter would be, how do you extrapolate? How do you go from I've listened to, say, Elmer Jensen or Joe Booker or Al Frost, whomever, right? Pete Mena. So Pete's done a video on spring fishing in Minnesota. Well, spring in Minnesota is what? When are their stuff open? Friggin' June?
Yeah, early June.
Right? Well, we're in spring now.
Mm-hmm.
So there are similar situations, but we're apart by a few months here. So,
well, when do you classify midsummer then for you guys?
It's not even midsummer. The deal is this: is midsummer comes and it stays, right? If you're in the South or you're in a different region, Pennsylvania, wherever it might be. What I'm getting at is this: is don't worry about the seasons as far as like this season versus that season, because we're all looking for information. Take what guys are saying. Like Pete Mana says, this is a fall pattern on so-and-so lake. Well, you go, well, that's at fall comes in, you know, our fall starts in October. Their fall starts in late August or whatever. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just take those tactics and try to find the corollaries between, you know, what's going on in that. Is that things are cooling down? A lot of times guys in an article or a video, they'll sort of think things are cooling down and the bite's getting hot, or, you know, or try to figure out where they're at. And then you go, well, what are the temps looking like that time of year for these places? Because if you want to learn as much as you can, you have to learn how to transpose that information. So like Joe Bucher going springtime musky tactics and he's fishing Eagle River, right? And it's May versus me and I'm fishing the same pattern and it's February, right? So it's about water temp. It's about the life cycle of the fish. And so you have to just take everything that you read, because like if you did month to month, if you went, I'm going to do what everyone else is doing in so-and-so, but I'm going to apply it here, it's not going to work. So you have to just take these morsels, these little pieces of information that you learn from everybody and learn when they apply for your region or your body of water. So there's not a great translation. So a guy in West Virginia, he can steal some great information from a guy in Minnesota, but you got to learn to know when to apply it, which he's asking. You can't really classify the seasons. You've got to sort of go, what season are they fishing and when are those conditions similar to what my conditions will be or are going to be, right? So we're way ahead of you guys right now as far as spawn. We're ahead of you guys as far as this, that, and the other has happened. By the time your season's open, we're starting to establish summer patterns and you guys are in the spring thing, right?
Yep. Yep,
and so you just got to learn a little bit from everybody and just sort of apply it. And you go, okay, when they say spring, you know, and it's like listening to podcasts or reading articles like Bucher or somebody says spring. Well, it's usually May, which is March. Okay. But then you hit your summer peak and they seem to hold on for a lot longer here. So we'll get these different lulls. So you just have to transpose that information the best you can and apply it to your geographical region. So a dude in Maryland's experiencing something completely different climatically than a guy in Iowa, right? So just steal as much as you can. That's the way we all learn, and just like take all these little pieces of information and go, okay, they're saying midsummer. Well, where's midsummer for me? And I guess the best thing to pay attention to is like, midsummer temps in Minocqua on the water are what, Jay? 65 to low 70s?
What time?
Like midsummer, July, August. 70s.
More or less, yeah. For that period, right. Yeah.
And so, like, you take that, which would be the semis canyon, and you go, okay, well, in Ohio, we might hit that way before that, so we can pretend that this is midsummer, and some of those tactics and some of those patterns will apply. That's sort of the caveat. You have to sort of do some of your own mental work and go, where are they at? Are they geographically north of me, geographically south, east, west, and what's going on there differently? I've done that for years where, you know, I can think of a million freaking Lindner videos I've watched or the Bucher or this, that, and the other. And you just pay attention to what season they're saying. And you go, well, this might happen on my body of water. That would be the best way. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah. I hope it makes sense. I don't know. On to the next. Jesse. Hey guys, I'm a 16-year-old angler. Love listening to the podcast and I've learned a lot. I do a trip to the French River on the opening weekend in June. Wondering what depths and structure I should cover. What should I really be looking at to target on the French River? Early season. We're talking some French River here, Jay. Give me that early season rundown. on where we're looking for early season fish, Jay.
You ever fish French River?
I can't say that I have.
No, I haven't either.
Are we talking French River in Canada?
It sounds like it.
I think, yeah.
So he's like, Canada opener is probably, what's that, second week of June?
Says the opening weekend in June. So, yeah.
Yeah. Kind early season. Yeah, coming off the spawn, might still be spawning, you know. Don't know what the layout of that river is, but
it can be
shallow, weedier.
It can be shallow and rocky. I mean, it can get some fast moving stuff there, but it's just the same old trope though when it comes to early season stuff.
Yeah,
shallow and warm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Shallow and warm.
And so back bays, anything that's holding heat. You got rocks in the French River. You got back bays. You got edges. You got sand. You know, you got emergent vegetation. That's where you need to be looking. Anything that has a temperature benefit, it's that thermal energy thing. You know, and so, you know, if we go to like a pocket, slack water is going to have less current in it. It might warm up during the course of the day. And then, Jay, take us through some great early season downsize presentations. Here they come.
Downsize presentations, early season muskie, small bucktails. Booker 500s, Booker 501s, MEPS musky killers. Something that does not have a ton of vibration. Forget the big bladed stuff. It's too early.
No 12s,
stick with the small stuff. No double 12s burning. Yeah, slow down your presentation. Give it some stop and goes on your retrieve on bucktails. That is key. Most people just reel them in straight and hopefully proceed to give it a pretty good figure eight after that. But, you know, if you're on a river, it's probably slightly darker water. That's advantageous, too, for, you know, shallow water fish.
Yeah.
And jerkbaits, anything erratic, any jerkbait you like. If you're really good at dive rise baits, Titan's not too big a bait. I mean, I always used 9-inch weighted Suix was always kind of my thing really early season. Had a lot of fish and a lot of responses using that kind of method. And
I'll say,
if you're great with gliders, throw a glider.
And that could
get that thing zipping and just give it some good hang time.
That could be tough with the current. One thing that popped in my Canadian brain, which are shad wraps. The Balsa shad wraps.
Great. The bass size ones?
No, the super shad wraps.
SSRs, yeah.
I mean, casting, a lot of people think of it as just like a real, just trolley thing. But, I mean, they're rock solid casters, especially on moving water. You know, it's not too big, not too small. You got enough action to call some fish in. Jay, one of Jay's favorite, that 5-inch slammer. Always on the ticket. I would say probably an imperative thing though in that situation is cast shallower than you think. You know, get it up on the dirt and bring it in. You know, as shallow as you can get your presentations and start out, because a lot of times on moving water it's cooler on those edges. They'll tuck up as far as they can, so get them in tight.
David,
I'm a new musky angler. They're my main focus this year. I live in northern PA and fish a lake that mostly fish some rivers. You know, what are some good baits and tips for finding these? Oh, here we go. Practically the same question. So we're going to give you a really similar answer there as far as that early season stuff. Lake fish, river fish, not a massive thing. I would say on a lake, though, I would lean on gliders a bit more, because moving water glide baits can be somewhat problematic if you're not dealing with slack. If we got lake fish, that's the same old thing, man, the big hang time. You know, the small mini tap dancers. One of my favorites is that guppy. The True Glide guppy.
True Glides, yeah.
It's a great size. Got great hang time. That's going to be really up that alley. But, David, refer to the previous answers. You can't go wrong there. Okay, Robert. Can you guys do an episode of the podcast about the Niagara River? I live 15 minutes from it and have hit that river so hard during this summer. I only got one muskie. He goes on to say, he said, I don't want to drag troller drag tubes. I want to catch them casting. Bunch of follows. So I'm paraphrasing here. Can't do a whole podcast on just one body of water, but in this statement, he says, I really don't want to troll or drag tubes. He says, I want to get them casting. He's having a lot of follows, but the muskies in my area are tough. So if you're having a lot of follows, let's start there. Some stuff about how to convert some of these following fish. So if you're getting too many follows, you're either not adding enough action or you're going too slow, right? Think about triggering these fish. So what are you doing on your retrieve? Are you adding a mid-cast trigger on every cast? Are you doing something special in that middle section? And then on these fish that are making it in boat side or however your methodology is, how many are you converting in your figure eight? Right? So if you're engaging a fish, you've got his attention. You've done the hard part. Now you just got to catch him, which is the other hard part. So be thinking about what you can do special in each retrieve. Every single cast matters. What can I do halfway back that's probably going to help me get a eat? Right? And if that doesn't work, am I set up and I'm doing a super well-executed figure eight that's got triggering qualities? Right? Am I adding variances in the depth? Am I adding variances in the speed of my figure eight? So, you know, you should be converting a percentage. And I don't know what that number is. You know, it varies body to body of water to body of water. But you should be converting a respectable percentage of the fish that follow you in for figure eights, right? If you are not, that means A, your figure eights need some help, or B, you're on a lake where they just won't eat in eights, and that happens rarely. I would not chalk it up to B just off the bat, right? There's some places like they're just so persnickety in figure eights, it's just a pain. But in general, most places you're going to be able to convert a bunch of these fish. So sort of spend some time, assess what you're doing in your figure eight. Is there room for improvement in your figure eight? And once you get that sorted out, sort out the rest of your casting game. Am I adding those triggering qualities to every presentation? Am I adding these dramatic moments in the middle of the cast? And if my eights are good, you're going to convert some more fish.
Yeah.
The other thing I'd say is this. Don't write off. It says, I want to get them casting. If everyone else is doing really well trolling, right? Or everyone else is doing really good jigging, why buck the system? Right? And this, Robert, this isn't just like for your question. This is a generality that I come up against all the time. I don't like trolling. Well, some days you got to go, I don't like getting skunked. Do I like getting skunked? Yeah. Or do I like trolling? What do I like least?
Right.
Had a trip this week, and it has been Mr. Toad's wild ride of weather, right? And it was grueling, and it was one of the few days I can remember where I could not see a bait fish, right? I've got every piece of electronics you've ever thought of on my boat. And I'm looking around, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing that. Everything is so tight to the bottom that by the time our baits are getting in the water and they're getting down to where they need to be, they're on their way back up, throwing rubber, right? And I'm going, we got to troll, we got to troll, we got to troll. Right? And that was the only bite of the day, is freaking dragging 4-ounce spinner baits on the bottom. And everything was tight. That was it. So if you're going to, and this goes for any geographic location, whatever you're doing, if you are going to write off an entire methodology, expect that you're writing off an entire percentage of a catch, right? If your goal is to catch 100 fish this year and you say, I am not going to troll, well, lop that in half. I mean, it just makes no sense to me that if conditions are screaming, do this, and all the signs are pointing towards do this, but you don't want to do it, don't expect the results. And like I said, I mean, I am not the most enthusiastic jigger. You know, I'm not like, heck yeah, we're going to jig for 8 hours, boys. Some of the best strikes I've ever had in my life. I mean, just power upon power. But you got to do it to get the job done. And so this is way, like I said, Robert, this is not to your question, just a general statement is, if you want the results, if you want trophy class fish in the net, you got to do it all, and you got to do it all well. It's just a statement. What do you think, Jay? Jay hates trolling. I'm teasing.
Yeah, I'm not big on trolling, but, you know, like you said, you were out the other day, and when you described the conditions, it's like you quickly pinpointed what depth you needed to be at.
Yeah.
You know, same thing with Robert. It's like, you know, Robert won the first battle. He contacted fish. Mm-hmm. He's on him. That ain't easy, you know? And I imagine he's on a big, wide river. You know, it's just like, a needle in a haystack if you're, not tuned into that particular system. So, I understand where he's coming from. He's like, oh, man, I want to get him casting, mm-hmm. you know? The trolling thing's boring to him, you know? And, he sees other guys with the big boats and, 600 lines out. And, they're getting fish every day. But he's like, he wants to chuck baits. I agree completely with what you said. You know, it's gonna be a tough one. If he can detect a certain depth, maybe there is some kind of, not knowing about that system, it sounds like one of those big, deep rivers is just conducive to trolling. You find where the bait fish is laying that particular day, it's like coming off some cold front and they're laying down at 24 feet. It's like casting's going to be a tough nut to crack. So,
yeah. Well, in that situation, like I said, gussy up the eights, add some mid cast retrieve. You'll see some other results. And like I said, in the general thing, don't write off a whole methodology though. And that goes for all of you. But also too, it's just sometimes, God, I'm with you. There's days where I just want to scratch my eyeballs out before I troll, to be honest with you. But if you got to catch a fish, if it's your job here and you're like, okay, something's got to happen. We got to miss one or lose one or got to grind it out. Using all those tools at your disposal are often what it takes to get it done. Anyway, all right, let's do one more here before I fall asleep. So folks, a very, very thrilling podcast where Steve and Jay are up way too late. Christopher.
Musky 360 after dark.
After snark. Christopher, I'm looking for a rod and reel for my wife. She's 5'6 and a beginning musky fisherman. Can you tell me what I should be looking at for a rod and reel? She's 5'6", Jay. You know the answer. Go for it.
8-footer, 8'6", mm-hmm. shield rod.
Somewhere.
And I'm sure we've got a proper combo on sale right now, too. Probably. Let me bring the website up.
I'll tell you, I think in that height, the 8-footer, the Creaker Special.
Yeah, the Creaker Special.
Is about right. I've got some female clients that are about that height, and the 8 or the 8-6 seem to be the ticket.
Generally, it performs well for them going with that length? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it's all, okay. Again, it's all proportional. I mean, if I can get them on an 8-6, I prefer it just to have a bigger, wider 8.
Yeah.
Both side. I mean, sometimes the 8-footer is the most comfortable.
Someone's fishing out of a different boat height, too.
Yeah,
that's
the thing. If you got a big, high gunnel boat, you don't be getting the 8-footer. You might have to get an 8-6 or depending if you're in a freaking Lund Tyee and you're sitting 17 feet off the water or a John boat. So take that in consideration. So the height of the boat, if you feel like when you're fishing that you're high off the boat, you need to add some length there. I would say the biggest thing for female anglers, though, if you're like, hey, you're going to take your wife or your girlfriend fishing, right? It's something to think about here, guys. Don't stick them on a Tranx 500. You got these freaking Gigondo reels. I don't think an Akuma, like the 400 series Komodo, is going to be a comfortable reel.
Yeah, if you've got a low profile reel that's in a smaller frame size, it's just going to fit them better.
What's the one, Jay? There's a Akuma Citrix. Is that still available?
Yeah. Yeah.
Citrix comes to mind. That's a good size reel. And that is for kids, women's, you know, that kind of 300-ish size. What's it? Is it a Tatula from Diola or whatever the heck it's called?
Yep. Anything in a 300 size, smaller, lighter.
I mean, a Tranx 400 is not that big of a reel in the grand scheme of things. You know, compared to, I throw Beasts and Toros, and the Tranx is a little bit smaller, but I think more than anything, the rod length is not going to be the issue, just is that reel comfortable. They don't have to palm it or something, or, you know, but I feel like I've got these small 300 size reels for female anglers and younger anglers, and it's a much better experience for them.
I bet.
Well, and for that, to be honest with you, it's like, how high is the trigger up on the thing when you're casting and all this stuff? So take that in consideration. Smaller reel, 8.86 kind of rod would be the thing, Jay. And then you put her on a pounder.
You get them jigging Magnum fuzzy dozens all day. Okay, mm-hmm. Pull up harder. Yeah,
rip that thing, Doreen.
Nope, just the opposite. You want to put on something that's going to be not light, not necessarily light lures too, because you don't want somebody that's new to the game backlashing at all.
Well,
get them something ideally that's, say, well over 2 ounces.
Yeah, somewhere in it.
But you know what I mean? Well, it's just, it's not going to cause overruns, because that's no fun for anybody.
Little trick here, folks, and I do it every day on the boat. I think I've said it before. When you put on a new lure, twist down your freaking little anti-reverse thing until it won't fall, and then back it off. If you got a wife or a girlfriend, hey, honey, would you like to see what we've been doing on Saturdays other than getting drunk? And they take them out on the boat and they're backlashing, they're going to have a bad time. Set that anti-reverse so that bait will just barely fall off the spool, right?
Yep. That's exactly what you need to do.
And I can take a client that is apprehensive about bait casters. They're like, I throw spinning. There's still some spinners out there, or people going, I fish 5 times a year and it's always with guides, and I backlash a bunch or whatever. Just set the reel up. Take 5 seconds, because everybody gets in a hurry and they're like, I want to catch fish. 5 seconds to set the reel every time you change the bait is better than 35 minutes on a rat's nest from hell. And I'm ADD and I've learned that. I go, okay, every time I switch this guy's bait, I'm going to just take the rod real quickly and make sure it's set appropriately. That 5 seconds saves me an hour and a half of picking out crap. So, and do yourself a favor. You got kids, you got wives, you got girlfriends. You listen to the podcast here, you probably don't have kids, wives, or girlfriends, right? Nobody. I'm listening to these musky guys. I don't have time for women's. What are you talking about?
I talked to a guy called today, and he just started listening to the podcast, and he said he went back and he listened to every episode, and he plans on visiting each episode too when he has time. That's a lot of hours, man.
That's a lot of hours.
He's into it.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Awesome to hear, man. We appreciate it.
He won't listen to this episode twice.
There you go.
The big letdown, folks. We're back to the grind. We did the Q&A this week. We'll do something fun for you. We're still having a Titan hangover, Jay. We've been just running and gunning so hard. There's so much going on. We got big musky freaking shop bash news coming up, but I just said, Jay, I'm not getting home until 10 o'clock. Let's just Q&A her tonight. So we phoned this one in, boys. All right, Jay Bird, say goodnight.
Thanks, guys.
Later.